Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
That's a fact. I defy you to say otherwise.
Justin Robert Young.
Yo, what up?
I'll tell you what's up, guys. You know what my finger is on right now?
Yeah. Please don't finish that sentence if it's not something that's on your computer.
My finger is on the submit for review button for my Story Voice app.
What?
I've loaded it up. I've been testing it, and I think it's ready to go and go out into the rest of the world. Everything seems to be working right. I haven't had any people report any major glitches. And Story Voice is my voice dictation app that I created that automatically inserts punctuation and quotation marks around stuff. Works pretty well. The response so far has been good. And, you know, I can keep tweaking it and trying to, you know, figure out what else I need to add to it, but I think it's time to submit it. But I figured I'd wait until this. If you go to storyvoiceapp.com, you can see this. There's a video of the latest version of this, and it shows you how it works. It's a pretty quick demo, etc. For some reason, Bryce, I need you to tell me what browser you're using so I can figure out how to recreate that error you're getting in the web, in the app, and the web page. So I've refined it a bit. I've added little things to it to make it clear what it's doing. I've got a little Q&A. I've added a support ticket system, etc. And now is the time where I release this.
So,
folks, congratulations, man. I love the concept and the beta versions of the app that I have played with. I think it is remarkable. And ultimately, it very concisely solves a major problem when it comes to voice dictation, and that is using natural language ways to add punctuation to something that you are writing. So you are not constantly just repeating all these very, very manual and programmable elements of written speech. It is fantastic.
So part of the thing I adore about this is that it was born of a real problem that you had and that you expressed to me on the phone years ago. In that the voice dictation, you know, you've got to say, that's hilarious, dot, dot, dot. Tell me more in quotation mark and all that stuff. One of the things you had expressed was the possibility of integrating the Apple Watch, where it's like you could tap once for a period, tap twice for a comma, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any plans to integrate that down the road, or is this a case where it's where you don't have access to those aspects?
I could, but I think I came up with a better solution. And so originally I thought about the idea of just doing a dictation app where you tap to add punctuation. And, you know, I thought that perhaps what, and that could still happen, but really it works. The punctuation part works really well. It works really well. The biggest, it's, you know, I would say that there's going to be, if you say something like he said in the middle of a blob of text, it may think that you were trying to say the first part of it was, and I'm making that part more intelligent as I go along, but I am using natural language processing to more intelligently. It's not just looking for phrases and saying this, it's actually looking for structure, but I want to keep it simple. My goal is to keep something very, very simple. And the idea was you hold down the button, you say a sentence, you let go of the button. Hold down the set button, say another sentence. And you can get into, you know, avoiding feature creep can often be an excuse for laziness, or it can be like, let me focus on the one thing it does really well. And I was able to get the punctuation recognition really well. Or my biggest problem when you use any kind of voice dictation is understanding specific words. And I'm limited by the same problems that Google has or Apple has, that trying to understand individual word pronunciations is still a challenge. And that's a frustrating thing for me, is that I have to sort of deal with, you know, the limitations of overall. But the punctuation part works. I've been very happy with it.
And so this is available now or will be soon?
I'm going to submit it to the App Store for review right now. But I was waiting for this podcast, this very, very podcast, to submit it. and we'll see what happens. It might get rejected. There could be problems. I don't know what's going to happen once I do this, but I'm going to press it on a count. I need a countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And there's one or more issues with your app information. perfect. Let me see what that is. I knew that's going to happen. But anyhow, point is symbolic, but I must select a primary category for my app.
Productivity.
What are the options? Probably. Yeah,
productivity. Writing. Ding ding. Yeah. And then a secondary optional one is, I have books, business, catalogs, education, entertainment, finance, food and drink, games, health, fitness, lifestyle, magazines, medical, music, navigation, news, photo, video, reference, shopping, social network, sports, stickers, travel, utilities, or weather.
Alternative erotica.
Weather. Weather. Put it in weather. Whether or not you're a writer, you need this.
How about education?
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll do that. So we'll do that. Now we'll save that and we'll try it.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hold on. I got to go back to that. There we go. All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You must
choose a tier for pricing.
Oh, you got to set pricing?
Yeah. That's kind of makes sense that I got to choose that. So, price. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the pricing for this kind of thing?
Andrew, how much is this going to cost us? I gotta pinch my pennies.
It's a great question. And there has been, we watched the app Ulysses go from a one-time fee to a monthly subscription fee, not without a lot of controversy and a lot of people who are, because Ulysses, the developers there, are dealing with, hey, we talked about this before, like, hey, we have to keep this thing updated and et cetera, so we're going to go to a monthly. But people are like, I pay for this once. Why do I keep doing that? I like the tweet bot mentality. Like, I'm going to make this. I'm going to update this. And if I have a radically new version of this, then it'll be Story Voice 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so pricing for this, how much should you pay? I don't want to do free. I want people to understand, you know, I'm not trying to, I don't want to just sell a bunch of them and say, hey, I don't care if people are happy or not. I made a bunch, or get a bunch of people using it for free and then try to flip them. I want people to go into it and say, if I'm going to pay my, I want to know what I'm buying, so I'll understand what I'm getting. I'm going to go to the website first and look at what this does.
Right.
So my mindset was $3, $2.99.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Either $1.99 or $2.99 is the sweet spot. Anything above there, you're looking at like, either you're buying it for intellectual property or another reason beyond that has gotten you into this ecosystem, or something that is like just absolutely mind breaking. And this, although you know, this is amazing, but I think $2.99 sets your expectations in the exact right place.
Yeah, it's not a full word processor suite, which, again, I've had people like, oh, could you add this, this, and this? I'm like Daedalus? Like, yeah, that's great. Like, well, that's 8 people developing that, and they've moved to a monthly subscription. They're charging per month what I'm going to charge for free, I mean, for one download to have it, you know, and that's certainly the model. So if we look in utilities and look at, let's say, writing utilities, et cetera, you know, you see some different sort of pricing for stuff there. Like, let's look at writing just to get, and I was looking at that where I was seeing like the median was like $3.99 or something around there, or it's, you know, the trying to do something as a free app and then pay to upgrade, it's a little more challenging, you know, and then you got to have Nagware and tell people to do that. So List for Writers is $2.99. Wordsmith, I bought it, so I don't know what the price is on that. I bought most of these, so I don't even know, you know, what they are, but anyhow, $2.99 is what I'm going to go for.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
That seems legit. So it seems to me like what you want to do is figure out a magic line, figure out your audience, imagine your audience as clearly as you can, and then figure out some number below which what you're doing is essentially free. Like, if you are a novelist, theoretically, you're making enough money per novel that $2.99 is essentially free, right? So you want to target that number and make it that impulse buy that nobody thinks twice about.
You know, and I remember there was John Gruber, Daring Fireball, which is often a very interesting blog, he put out a note app. And it was a kind of a neat note app. It had some functionality other note apps didn't have. And they priced it higher, like $8 or something, because they put a lot of hard work into it. And they were like, this is where app should be priced. And I don't know as much about app pricing or stuff that they do, but my, I always knew the market decides the price. You can say this is worth $8. Why not say it's worth $40? That's an arbitrary number
right.
to say
not,
that it's
why not say it's worth $1,000 or whatever, right?
Yeah. I mean, we knew from the magic business, it's like, what's going to make me the most amount of, what's going to give me the most amount of money. And that might mean selling it for 99 cents and selling a million of them, or it might mean selling it at $7.99 and selling, 30,000 of them, what have you. It's one of these things where the market decides these things. You can say, I artistically feel it's worth this much. And you could say you pay other things worth this value. But, trying to compare the value of, a cup of coffee. We say that with our own podcast, a cup of coffee. And it's like, I can't go without a podcast. Try to have some people go without coffee.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, says you, but then again, I was definitely driving an RV for a lot of time. And thankfully, we live in a world where everything's paid for by Blue Apron. But if it weren't, you could very easily get me to shell out 99 cents per hour of audio entertainment to keep my mind engaged and my children alive as I cross the country.
Yeah, but also Audible does that. Nobody does that for them. Right. They do have premium podcasts that they charge money for, or they want you to burn your credits on. So it is ultimately, as long as people are out here doing world class content for free so they can get that ad money, then that's there. Now, if the 30 for 30 podcasts then said, hey, look, we're going to do all these for free. We'll always do all these for free. But once a year, we're going to do a 4-part mini series. That is going to be above and beyond what we've normally done. We're finding a great story, and that's going to be $2. That's going to be $3. I think that there's an option for that. But for right now in the app space, the point is to get a user base. The point is to make sure that people are in there. You have the right kind of users that are using the product so you can iterate on it and continue to grow.
Just applying my ratings here. So I want to bring this up to the subject of MoviePass.
Yeah.
Go on.
So we're all familiar with this, heard about this concept. So it was something that was announced a couple years ago. MoviePass came out, and I actually found out I signed up for it or something. I never got followed through or whatever. But MoviePass is this application. It's a service that you pay a flat fee. And originally it was, they've had different pricing levels at it. You pay a flat fee. In this case, it's $9.95 a month. And what you get is you get all the movies in the theater you can handle, not counting 3D. So you take your movie pass, you go to the ticket counter, use your movie pass, which is actually MasterCard, to pay for your ticket. You walk right in and you see a movie. $10. Now, how does this work? Through the magic of startup internet money, the movie theater gets full price for that ticket. You pay them, that ticket costs $12. The theater gets $12 and is reimbursed by movie pass. MoviePass pays for that. They've got, I think, a couple $100 billion in funding, and they want to build up a database. They want to sell ad information. They want to be able to do this, and they think they can make their money back, in volume.
I'll tell you what, man, that's not the most insane idea to have. Like subscriptions are huge. I think about the things that I've subscribed to. Subscriptions are very, very sticky. And they allow a level of intimacy and access that is utterly unprecedented. Especially if you take something that is normally transactional, like watching a movie. I walk up, I give you my $10, you give me a movie, and we're done. But instead, to transform that to an ongoing back and forth relationship, there's a dollar value to that, and it might be a smart idea on their part.
We're going to see, Brian, because, I live in L.A. The cost of a regular movie ticket's like $16 or $17. If I see 3 movies a month, that means that's going to be, a $52 charge minus the 10. It's $40 they have to pay to the theaters. You get, a lot of people doing that, a million people, that's $40 million a month you've got to be making in ad revenue based upon those choices.
Yeah, I think there's another. If I was going to propose something, and I don't want to talk out of turn here, but there was a press junket that I went on with Tim League, founder of the Alamo, and he said some things that indicated that what they're doing with the Alamo Victory Rewards program is fairly extraordinary, because what you get to know is not only what they're doing, you get to know what movies they're seeing, you get to know when they see them, you get to know what seats they prefer, you get to know what food they order when they're there. This level of kind of unprecedented data to mine is unbelievably valuable. And if MoviePass, even if they lost money, just for the data set that they're able to get, it seems like it would be worth it.
Who do they sell it to is the question, right?
Because they have an
adversarial relationship with the people that could use that data the most, which are the customers that are going to see the movies in the theaters that MoviePass is paying for. So
I don't even know that you need to sell it necessarily, because that's a fine default assumption. It's like, well, you sell the data and you get money for that stuff. But what if they were to make and keep in mind, I am somebody who will never own the property Scam School. I came up with the idea. I brought it to Revision 3. Revision 3 got sold to Discovery or whatever. So realizing that I could reach out to this audience, even though I wouldn't own it. So the solution was, well, I guess I'll create a store to cater to these people. And thus Scam Stealth was born. With that being in mind, like it seems like they could do a similar thing. No.
Well, can I interject here for a moment?
Sure.
When I hear the, hey, we want to sell the ad data, we want to do that, which is great. People talk, it's a very viable model, but you have to say, if they're losing $30 a month on somebody, it means you need to be making several hundred dollars a year per user in that model. And granted, I think there may be another model. I have an idea of what the real model is, but they haven't said, but what does Google make per year off of you, Brian, as an average person?
I actually did cross the line to where I pay $10 a year for storage so that I can have a big fat, you know, storage counter in my Gmail account.
But the average person using Google services, and they have Google data. Remember, you have Gmail, you have all this. They have a tremendous amount of data on you. They have more data on you than anybody, and Facebook is probably close to it or whatever. How much does Google make per user?
Theoretically, zero. Yeah.
What's that?
Theoretically, zero.
No, they make profit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking how much they charge.
No. How much they make for advertising? How much does ad revenue and all that bring into Google as profit?
I would imagine all the money in the world.
How much would you guess per person?
What, 200, 300, I would guess? Lower? 50 per person?
A year? Are we talking a year?
$20 per person? $10 per person?
About $10 per person.
Holy cow, that's amazing.
And now granted, that's $10 off of everybody on the planet almost.
Sure.
But of the billion or so people, you add up what their total round of revenue is per person, it's $10 a year. And so that's when I hear that, you know, MoviePass is, well, we're gonna sell the data and stuff like that. I think, yes, there's a market for that. And I think if maybe MoviePass is, we're just going to limit to this in broader things. I if Google can only make $10 per, granted, I would love to make $10 per head for a billion people. And that's why. Why is Google pushing YouTube Red? Why is Google now pushing these paid services? Because, and that's actually, I've heard that number's kind of declined a bit too, because I've heard it was like $16 a year, $14 a year. And then, you know, it declined, but it's 1.3 billion people are actually Google consumers. And remember, we go, people's 7 billion. Not so much in China.
Yeah. You know? Sure.
You know, so not a bad business to be in, but that revenue, the value of that data has been declining. As Facebook came in, that's why Google was pushing Google Plus, because they knew that Facebook would have even more data about this, et cetera. So I think MoviePass is going to evolve into something else. And part of the reason AMC has threatened lawsuits, AMC is upset with this. And the speculation is AMC is about to come out with their own subscription service that they want to sell, and they're upset that MoviePass is going to be $10 a month, where AMC is going to have to charge something more. Think about this. We have like fewer people go to the movies than ever. You know, the thing that counts for box office, you know, returns is that prices have gone up so ridiculously high. You know, the average American buys 3 tickets to see a movie this year. In 1962, it was 12. It was way, way higher. So we go way, way less. And there's a lot of reasons for why this is going on. So somebody said the theater subsidized this a bit. No, the theaters, I don't know if theaters love this at all or not. I don't know what their attitude is for it. You know, I think that you know, there's a fear there, and there's a fear of what happens. But I think that what's going to happen is, if you're MoviePass and you have a couple million people, and you know that if you tell people, hey, go see this movie, whatever, you can do that. Look at how many movies came out that were actually kind of good movies, but nobody saw. You know, if you're a studio and you're going to spend $30 to $40 million in promotion, you know, if you knew that you could get a million people into the theater on Friday to see your movie, which is actually testing really good, and it would mean that the second week you were actually going to make money, maybe you do that. Yeah. Maybe you're like, hey, you know.
Well, listen, there's a reckoning coming for theaters. We were talking before you came back, Andrew, that to me, theater pricing for me, and these are nowhere near the same kind of business, but it feels as a consumer to me where CD pricing was before, you know, Napster and digital effectively totally changed the pricing game in terms of what it costs to listen to the music that you like.
Yeah, but just to interrupt for a second, the problem is that like in that situation, you had music companies and then you had a variety of distribution models in which you could handle it. Theaters are their own product, and theaters have a problem. Like when on an opening weekend for a movie, theaters get something like only like 10% or something of the actual ticket. You know, they have the way the window works. So when theater, like opening weekend, they only get a small percentage of it. They plan to make it back for concession and stuff. They don't have a lot of variability in ticket pricing. You know, the studios say you've got to charge this much. And that's why they've been adding these premium stuff in there, because this summer, sucked box office point of view. And that means it goes all the way down to the line to people who are in theaters can't control the content. You know, the studios control the content. So theaters have a bunch of sucky movies out there that nobody wants to see, which means that part-time employees aren't getting part-time jobs.
Yeah. Oh no, 100%. And again, like I said before, these are not the same industries. I'm just saying that the entire system right now is trying to contend with the fact that less and less people are going. And right now, you are seeing the natural encroachment of the future. And part of it is in stuff like MoviePass, and whether or not people are going to start offering subscriptions to these services. I know if Alamo Drafthouse offered me a subscription, I would certainly take it, depending on the price. I think the idea of private movie clubs are something that I am very interested in. If the experience was something that I could enjoy and really be excited for. But also the fact that now, you know, the rumors are again circulating that that we're going to see, you know, $40 day and date iTunes rentals and stuff like that.
I think that's a horrible idea. I don't see that going anywhere.
Of day and date digital rental.
Yeah, I think the $40 or $50 to be able to rent to see the movie on the same day.
By the way, keep in mind, you're not wrong, but you also are a single.
Brian, I understand the family value. I know that. I get that. But I think that it's not like – I understand there's this thing has been floated around for a long time. And I think, yes, I think there is a – how big will that market really be? Because, yes, you're in a family can stay at home and watch this movie, or you could watch one of the 1,000 other great things that are out there right now. And I think that we're no shortage of awesome things to watch at home.
But if it is there day and date movies is also a low stakes bet, right? If they fail, then you just have a movie that's in the VOD market that costs as many resources as putting something on the iTunes store, right?
Yeah, but so yes, I agree. It's an experiment worth trying. And in my theory is only my theories. You're going to run into the same sort of problem, though, that like, why do studios hate Netflix? Because Netflix was doing day and date. They were trying to put things out for theatrical release so they could do this. So now you're bypassing the studios. And if Marvel and whatever says, yeah, we're going to do this day and date stuff, the studios are going to say, OK, well, we're going to change the terms at which we do this. You know, do you want to run the trailer? Is this movie going to be a day in, you know, oh, Ant-Man 2, is that going to be a day and date release? You know what? Maybe we're not going to show the Ant-Man trailer in theaters. You know, it gets into this complicated thing. I mean, Brian, I 100% think there is going to be a market for, you know, families and stuff who don't want the hassle. But it's also like, well, why pay $40 for this when, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess to me, the inevitability is not whether or not this particular thing works, but the idea that the traditional way we see that we see movies right now are only getting more expensive, more inconsistent, and we're seeing sickness in this entire cycle. And so our capacity to enjoy entertainment has only gotten bigger and better and more voracious, and yet this has continued to become more unhealthy. So I would think that the natural step forward from that would be trying new ideas.
You know, and you wonder, like, because you look at, like, part of the problem has been fewer people go to the movies, and then they're trying to, and that's why things go up. That's why not just ticket prices and concession. Concession prices are effing hilarious. It is comical when you look at what the prices are for stuff, you know, $6 for a drink that 300 feet across the road, McDonald's sells for $1 and makes a profit on. And then as Brian's point, it's like you try to take your family out to see, you know, a movie. And, you know, if you got, you know, a family of four, if everybody wants to have popcorn and a Coke and candy and see a movie, that's over $100.
Yep. No, you know? In fact, that's exactly what I was going to point out is, and to be honest, I don't even as a consumer mind that because, you know, it's like it's not like the alternatives are much cheaper for us. It's not like anything else is going to be a more affordable evening out or day out for the family. I worked in a movie theater when I was a teenager, and it was, you know, it's a moment to talk to the manager and to have him personally acknowledge, like, yeah, we make no money on the movie. All we're going to make is sugar water and popcorn money, you know, because mm-hmm. those have decent margins, and that's what we got to push.
Yeah, I worked at my first job ever was a second run theater, like an art house theater. I worked at a second run theater, and then I worked at a chain theater, and you need to realize the difference in the economics between the first and the second one. But, you know, you realize like, yeah, how these things worked, why they had so much staff on, you know, big movie releases, et cetera. And then like, yeah, what the economics of it were, but it's just, you know, it's harder because like fewer people go to the theaters, fewer people want to go see movies. And even though you have to have this annual return, it's like fewer people are paying way much more.
Yeah.
Would you pay for any draft house walk into a theater monthly subscription?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Just for me or the family?
Let's say, let's go with you and then give kids. Me a number of how much it would cost to add on for the family, like per.
I would say, I would definitely, for a draft house level experience, I would pay $20 per family member, which is a lot, but that's
for you for, so what is the subscription for you? And then how much is the add on per family member?
Like right now, I don't know if we're just making stuff up. I would pay $20 for me and then, you know, $10 for each additional family member. I could decide for our family to pay basically, you know, a cable subscription price, like $50 a month for us to go. But knowing that that's only half the fee, because to go there, especially at the Draft House, that's one of the things that Draft House does that's brilliant, is they make the food good enough. They don't really squint too hard at the price for everything. It's expensive, and the margins are good. But, you know, you get hot wings, you get pizza, you get, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, come on, Brian. You got to get there early. I got a couple dark and stormies at the bar. Pretty I just traipsed on in beforehand.
Pretty great. And plus also, like at some level in my mind, when I go to a regular theater, I don't think of those as enhancements to the movies. If I get a hot tamales and a Coke, that doesn't make the movie better. But if I get a Guinness and a pizza, that makes the movie better.
Especially the Guinness.
Oh no, 100%, man. I got that big popcorn and it has butter in it, so Ashley can't touch it. It's amazing. Ooh,
so good. So good.
I would actually go higher. I would go anywhere between 25 and 30 bucks, specifically during the summer season where I'm definitely going to see 2 to 3 movies a month. You know, if I did that and then got some kind of discount on my food, that would be worth it. And to be fair, yeah, I'd pay 10 to 15 at just a little art house theater that, like, just, you know, was a 15 to 20 seat theater that just played, you know, the second run stuff that was really cool that could make it a more curated, fun experience. Like, I think that there is, we want to gather, we want to see the culture that we like together. That is undeniable. You just need to make it not blow. And Alamo has an entire brand on pay extra. It won't suck. We're going to go extra efforts to say it won't suck.
Right. Right. And curation is the magic word there. It's a matter of trust. It's the fact that it's like, I'm not worried about how much money you're taking from me. What I'm worried about is that my time investment, please don't make me get in the car, grab the family, drive out, sit down, and then regret being there. And in general, even as the Alamo Drafthouse has matured and learned to systematize, you know, as it franchises and so on.
You're still just pissed that they can't run the copyrighted stuff before the movie.
It was so great, man. Those punk rock days when they would just play all the copyrighted crap. It was amazing. Those were amazing days.
That is your, that
making
is your
fun of Andrew Maine's Wizard right. School.
Oh yeah. Tell me about this because I didn't see it, but I heard about it. I guess Roberto said that they were playing some of that.
They did like for one of the Harry Potters, they showed like all this knockoff Harry Potter stuff, and they had a bit from my Wizard School video where I'm like gleefully floating on a broom. So
and that was a fairly cost effective production, and that was part of the reason they were playing it, right? Because you're definitely
really good,
in your backyard.
That stuff was actually aired on public television. It was actually produced well enough.
Wait, it was?
But F you, Brian. It's fine.
No. I didn't know that it aired on TV. I thought it was DVDs only.
No, it was actually public television stations picked it up to air that.
Oh, that's awesome. That's amazing.
But thanks for the confidence, Brian. Thanks. Thanks. Yeah, PBS stations cross country played segments from that. So.
That is awesome, man.
Did you look doofy on the broom? Did you know? Do you know the clip that they're talking about?
Full out. Yeah, no, I got it. You know, so. Yeah. But it was out of context too. People were like, "What's this?" It's like it's a video for 8-year-olds. You know,
magical instructional video.
Yeah, it was the pathway to Satan. But you know, so you know. We're seeing interesting forms of entertainment, though, pop up. We've talked a lot about escape rooms. You know, escape rooms are, you know, increasing in popularity. They're popping up everywhere. People want to get out and go do something. And I wonder is it the micro theater? Is that it? Like the 20-seat theater, the thing where you put out, say, hey, everybody, I want to go see this Friday night. Who wants to go see this? So bigger than the average person's going to have in their home, nicer seats, a little more reclined. Maybe it's just a room full of friends.
Oh, that's interesting because
there's a great little theater called the New Parkway right around the corner that has a little bit of that Alamo Drafthouse experience where they bring stuff to you while you're sitting down and the food's good enough that you don't mind spending a little bit extra. They also do like big television events, like when the World Cup was on, they just put on the World Cup. So you could just find a cool place and come and a lot of people just go there to work and stuff like that. I think that idea, a micro theater that doesn't have the 90s kind of trappings of the art house theater where you're going to have the guy who owns it come out and talk about the movie beforehand, like you give a rat's ass what he thinks about it. just something that has just that little bit of sleekness and that little bit of like private club. The Playboy Club that showed rad art house movies. That's what I want. And I would pay for the privilege.
In my mind, the model that we're kind of talking around is basically, at some high end bars, you can rent a karaoke room where it's like you walk in and you have access to their catalog of 3,000 to 5,000 songs or whatever, and you can sing and sing into a good mic and all that stuff. If you could do that with movies, I would be totally down to buy a subscription to that. Something closer to like making movies like bowling or that kind of thing.
Somebody pointed out they've never been to somebody's house where the theaters were nicer than your local AMC. Live in LA and have friends that have stupid amounts of money with their own private screening rooms. And
oh, God, yeah. When you're sitting in Lazy Boys that fully recline on these, you know, 4K displays, like that's, believe you me, when you've got crazy money, consumer equipment for this kind of stuff has gone a long, long, long way.
Yep.
But I think that, you know, I was thinking of like, you know, what's sort of the future of social, like the Eclipse was a very cool event. I was thinking like the future of social media, and I thought, you know, it would be really cool. And there have been forms of this, but we haven't seen the form of it, you know, and that is thinking like, man, you know, a calendar my friends see that I say, who wants to do X, who wants to do this, but an actual calendar, then you could say, hey, Friday, who wants to go see blank? And if we get 10 people sign up and pay for the ticket advance, we get our own screening room.
Yeah.
You know, or we got I'm going to do an escape room next Thursday. Who does this? And that could radically change the economics of so much of this stuff.
Well, you know, and we're certainly in an age where there's no reason that somebody couldn't write in a piece of software that would automatize the challenging parts of that, where it's like, hey, if everyone's in at $20, we get to see it ourselves in our own private room. At $25, we get our own, you know, essentially butler to show up and concierge and make sure that we're treated right.
This sounds a lot like
sounds
Groupon.
Too, yeah. Impossible.
We are kind of describing Groupon
a little bit.
Well, but the problem with Groupon is that nobody makes money.
I mean, yeah, mechanically.
Yeah, I think that the idea is that if you could create a, you know, a how to book things in advance sort of system, and the idea of saying, okay, let's book it in advance, and you know, the idea of the escrow, or you know, kind of like the Kickstarter mentality. We're getting into that idea now. I'll pay for something I want in the future if I get it cheaper now. You know.
Yeah.
I know I'll want to do X. I know I'm going to want to see Thor Ragnarok, and I would love to see it in a theater full of, like, if I could rent a private theater with just 30 of my friends, I would love to say, hey, who wants to see this with me? You know, we have this much time to fill up and get the rest of the seats here. If not, I'll just pay the difference for that. Totally would do that. I would totally do that. And planning things like Eclipse stuff, whatever, you know, I think that would kind of, the idea of the social calendar, still, I think somebody could nail it and make it work great. And then you could plug in other sorts of cool, you know, features into it.
So, yeah.
Just a thought. Kind of cool. Just want that. Just want to be able to do that. We'd like to be able to do that. You know. And then because you can that, like some
that how Nerdtacular started. Yeah, it was. It was Scott renting out a theater and asking people to come and pay for it. But that was obviously that's a model you can do now. I don't think that's something that you can do within 2 weeks. You know, you can't just pop up on Facebook and be like, Thor Ragnarok, private theater. I just need 8 more people. Who's in?
Right.
That would be setting up the mechanism. And we've seen these amazing mechanisms that come about that Patreon's incredible. And Patreon, you go like, well, what's the difference? Do you need just people just pay for, you know, pay you once a month for a subscription to your podcast or whatever? And it's like, it's just changing it slightly and making it facilitating it differently. Kickstarter, you've got to say, I press this button and then blank happens. You've got to build that button. Got to build that button. And if you build that button and people understand, oh, if I press this button and I know what I get, sounds great. You can say, press this button and then do that button. And yeah. And it's like, no, you lost. You failed. You failed.
You lose. Good day, sir.
Yes. Gentlemen, any picks?
I think I mentioned it before, but hot damn am I enjoying getting caught up on Sam Harris's Waking Up podcast. He has top tier, extraordinary guests on there, and they talk a lot of real smart stuff, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
Smart.
Oh, you know what? Forget about that. That's not what I picked before. What I picked before was
forgetting.
Yeah, sorry. Forget I said that.
Unpicked.
What I've really enjoyed is Cracked Magazine's or Cracked.com's Movie Club. Cracked Movie Club. Basically, what they do is every month they pick a different director and they go through all month the movies from that director. The first month they did Steven Spielberg. And so it's like just the 90 minute experience of listening to them talk about, Raiders of the Lost Ark or whatever. And you get those extraordinary little tidbits, like part of the casting of Raiders of the Lost Ark was that they told, when they were trying to pick who would play Marion, they had various people come in and, cook something from a recipe with Harrison Ford, with the two of them in character. And so this is something that was unscripted, that was not on there, that they were just supposed to just stay in character and cook something in the company kitchen and figure out, you know, where the chemistry was. And that's part of how they selected that. This last month that I'm in and getting caught up in, they did a bunch of Christopher Nolan stuff, including, spending 90 minutes talking about Interstellar and Memento and a bunch of other stuff. It's great. It's great. I'm really, really enjoying it. I'm surprised at how much I'm digging it.
You know, Bill Simmons on his BS podcast has done like a really cool thing lately with actors who have been around for a little bit, that instead of just doing a kind of celebrity interview, he's just run through their IMDb with them, like from the beginning to the current project that they're plugging. And it's kind of a brilliant way to go about it, because you get, it kind of deflates a lot of the like gotcha kind of stuff where you're just like leading up to asking about something difficult, because eventually they're going to get to the movies that they didn't like. But I think the last one I did was with Charlize Theron, but it was really cool to talk to her, to hear just sort of, A, the origin story, but also like where she was, why she made the decision she made, where she felt like she went wrong, why the movies didn't turn out in the best way, some great behind the scenes stories. But I really think that there's something to podcasting is kind of entering into this, or a version of podcasting when it comes to pop culture is veering into this like really cool citizen deep dive sort of era.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some really rad stuff coming out of it.
I am going to double down on a previous pick. If you want to learn something, I mentioned lynda.com is a great resource, LYNDA. And if you many library cards, library systems will give you free access to lynda.com. But another one is, if you ever look at Udemy, UDEMY.com, Udemy also has a lot of great courses, but sometimes they're really highly priced. But there are sales all the time. So a course that costs $200, you wait a week or two and it's $10. Right now they've got a bunch of courses that are $10, like a 43-hour course on programming for iOS with Swift 4, etc. $10, you're getting a lot of great content, downloadable files. You can't beat that. And the course instructors are really good. They're the same people that speak at conferences and stuff. So between lynda.com, Udemy, there's some great stuff on YouTube too. So anyhow, I just bought up a couple weeks ago, I bought their course for Swift 3 iOS development, and they just updated one with Swift 4. So I bought that. Am I upset? No. It cost me $20. $10 for the first one, $10 for this one.
Yeah.
I'm kinda cool with this. So
dude, Lynda is legit. And if you think that you're like, oh well, tutorials on the internet, I know where those are found on YouTube. Look, man, $10 is a low enough buy-in that you are gonna get a quality of instruction that I think is gonna be well.
Oh yeah,
worth
and often
it.
They'll have downloadable files and other things, and it's a little bit more organized. I mean, I use YouTube all the time to sometimes learn things because it's a pretty quick, fast way to do it. And some of this 40-hour, I have like one 40-hour course that I have like, I'm gonna skip through. I'm gonna go jump right into another section because I think I know enough for the other stuff. But if I don't, then I'll go back. But yeah, YouTube's great. YouTube can be great, but it go to where people are incentivized the most, and the quality magically, for some reason, seems to be better. I don't know how that is, guys.
Magic.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Mm.
It's been
after 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh my God, look, the sun, it's gone. It's amazing.
So good.
Oh, my back.
Oh, my back.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.